Travolting presents Bobbin for Robin. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering Cadillac Man. Enjoy the episode.
Okay, so my first problem. He's not just selling Cadillacs. He's selling other cars too, right? Like, I understand that Cadillac Man is a term.
Yes.
Right? For, like, used car sales. But also, he's not, like, I don't know. It's not really a problem. Just like, you know, Stuart, I feel like we talked about, like, three movies like this on the show before.
We have.
That have this exact same kind of premise. Mm-hmm. Except, well, this one, I'm very scatterbrained right now.
Good.
Welcome back to Travolting. Bobbin for Robin. Cadillac Man. Weird movie.
Last week, you listened to the Earth Day special.
This episode's actually like coming out on Earth Day.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. We should have just delayed it, maybe. But we won't. We didn't, so it's fine.
Whatever.
I'm so it's lost not a in the sauce.
This is not a superhero movie.
It's not
where a dude becomes the Cadillac what are you, Man.
The Cadillac Man. He's just like, I am Cadillac Man. He's like flipping cars. That would have been a great midpoint twist. That being said, this movie does have a truly admirable midpoint twist. I don't think this movie is successful.
No.
But I do have to give it a lot of plaudits for the twist it does make.
Okay.
Like, you spend half this movie being like, well, this is just another middling Robin comedy. Like, this isn't one of his higher end. This isn't lower end. It's just like kind of, you know, meh.
Yeah.
And then it makes a choice halfway through, completely changing the tone and genre of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that version of the movie that turns into is successful either.
Yeah.
But I have to respect that they just went and did it.
Right. That's my cat.
Yeah, it kind of is like flipping out. Stuart, what do we have Robin-wise? Like, what? I know he was just in the Earth Day special. He's gotten his Oscar nomination for Dead Poets Society.
So, Cadillac Man is one of his many movies he's making while he's staying in New York.
Yes.
That's, I mean, really, ultimately, like, that's kind of it. Like, as I explained in the prior episodes, Robin, in the time of, like, Dead Poets Society, as well as, I think, Portrait of a White Marriage. He's living in New York with Marsha, and he's doing a play with Steve Martin, Waiting for Godot. He does Dead Poets Society in Delaware, and he's doing a few bunch of other different projects. Next week, we'll talk about the movie Awakenings. I believe that was also a movie that he did while he was staying in New York.
Awakenings is, it's him and De Niro. It's a big, like,
yeah,
it's a, I haven't seen it, but it's to my understanding, it's like a New York movie.
Yeah, a very New York movie. And so this is just one of those like roles he's like doing while he's living out in the city. Yeah. Shortly after this, I think around the time of probably Fisher King and Hook is when he's moved back to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And he's back in like the LA circuit kind of. But this is just another like kind of chapter in his like New York stage as he's out there. The movie, I think this was just like this is one of those movies where, you know, I think they filmed it shortly after Dead Poets Society was filmed, but it wasn't like released until after he had already gotten like his Oscar nomination. So it's obviously like, I mean, the title screen at the very front, it's like very clearly like trying to capitalize off of Robin Williams.
Yeah, of course.
But I don't think this was like, this is not a film that was made utilizing the coattails of Robin Williams. It was more like a luck of timing, so to speak.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, that absolutely makes sense.
So like, because I don't want people to think it's like he had amazing success in Dead Poets Society. So what is he going to do next? Cadillac Man. No, no, that is not what happened. This was like filmed roughly around the time, like probably it was probably the very next thing he did right after just getting wrapped off of Dead Poets Society. It was probably the next thing he did. I almost think the Earth Day special was filmed after Cadillac Man.
The Earth Day special was also like a day at work.
Exactly. That's why I think it was like the Earth Day special probably had a very short post-production turnaround. Cadillac Man went through a lot of funding problems and things like that, as most of those films do. It doesn't have... so I think the director at the helm of this, Roger Donaldson.
Yes.
He's mostly known for these kinds of...
I mean, he's a journeyman.
He is a journeyman director
who just kind of like, he's known for like, he gets you the movie. I mean, he directed Sleeping Dogs, this is a Naked New Zealand classic. But the bigger movies that like an American audience would know him for are like Cocktail, No Way Out, Dante's Peak, he did the Volcano movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like one of those guys who just like, you know, churns out movies, never really gets like plaudits necessarily.
Yeah.
But it's just like silently... I hate to use this word to describe film, but just as like creating product, you know?
Yeah. I think this is, I'm trying to see if, when did this, this was produced by Orion.
Yeah, the best film company of all time. Anyway, Orion has such a good logo.
It does.
I get so hyped when Orion logos.
When you see an Orion logo.
Because it's like the, you know, it's the star, the kind of like, the 80s like starscape with the blue in it, and then the little stars come up and then they make the Orion.
Right.
I don't know. It's pretty good, right?
And then it went defunct in 99.
But it's back.
But it's
with
back.
A lesser logo.
Yes, it is. It's a bad logo.
Yeah, the new one's not as good, but it's still like mostly fine.
Relaunched in 2013, yeah. I mean, that's really all I have to say about the context of Robin for Cadillac Man. I think even he knew this film wasn't going to be great. It was more so just a job of opportunity.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm sure he was just like, you know what? There's comedy. They want me in it. I enjoy the concept. Because the thing about like comedy is like you don't always know if they're going to be good when right. you're making them.
Yeah.
Like you could get the pitch of this movie is pretty good if you're told it mm-hmm. as a comedian. You're a used car salesman, which is inherently a fun concept.
Yeah.
You have five women that you're juggling, that you're trying to like placate and not let know each other, and you have to sell 12 cars in one day. But then halfway through the movie, you're gonna get stuck in a hostage situation. It's a fun pitch.
Yeah, yeah. And I also say like Robin. I think Robin also pulled from this role because his dad was an executive at Ford Automotives. So that's just a little fun little fact for you.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, dad worked at Ford. I guess I'll be the car salesman in Cadillac Man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Robin does that a lot.
Robin does do that a lot.
Where it's just like, oh, I see a little thing that's connected to my personal life.
Yeah.
Sounds good. But yeah, this is like...
Because he's trying to do like a mix. He's trying, like he's established himself as a dramatic actor, truly. And he's going to keep that train going, but he still wants to work in comedies because he's a comedian.
Right.
So this is like the really beginning of his bounce between the two.
And I think going into this movie, there was no misunderstanding that they were going to work around his comedy.
Yeah.
So like that was another draw for him. I read somewhere that like they used Steadicam a lot in this movie, mainly because like they wanted to be able to move with Robin for whatever he was doing.
Which is very smart.
It is very smart. I just wish they had stuck to that format.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they do. There's like a few, like the very first scene in the movie has like a pretty interesting like Steadicam work going on in it. But then like once you get to the hostage situation, it feels then very like static cam. Yeah.
Well, I think a lot about like when you bring that up, I think a lot about Ghostbusters. A movie that the charm of the first Ghostbusters is so much just how like shaggy and loose that movie feels.
Yeah.
Because that movie's a comedy first with like ghosts in it. It's a comedy about building a business. And then like there's ghosts. Ghosts are just the business.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters 2, the problem is, it's so like, and Bill Murray and Harold Ramis have talked about this, is that that movie is like so kind of locked into the effects work that they had to do for it.
Yeah.
That there's not really space to be Shaggy and loose.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're like, you have to hit this mark. You have to do this. Mm-hmm. This has to occur.
Yeah.
Whereas you watch the first Ghostbusters and they're just riffing.
Yeah.
And the camera's like working with them.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with kind of like, man, and Robin Williams as a performer is like, you have to be willing to like be loose with him.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise you're not going to get what you want out of him.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
You can't tell Robin, here's your mark A, you move to mark B, and then you go to mark C.
I just imagine, like, again, with us working in film and television, like, what would a marking rehearsal with Robin Williams be like?
Try a new one.
Probably doesn't do one. Well,
you probably get a really good first AC who's just like,
yeah, it's like, because, like, I just can't imagine, like, maybe he got better at this, but I just don't imagine Robin in the start of his acting career very good at hitting his marks and finding his light. It was more so like, no, just light the scene for wherever he's going to go. And like, he might hit his mark, but be prepared for him not to.
I mean, this is one of those movies where, or he's one of those performers where like,
what's a rehearsal?
We're like, yeah, what's a rehearsal? But like, where you mark instead of like, you know, we work on shows that can be rigid sometimes.
Yeah.
With like, you go here, you go there, and then you wind up there.
Yeah.
Whereas like on some productions and with some actors, like it's kind of like you just mark like, okay, especially with film cameras, like, this is 10 feet away, this is 15, this is 20 feet, and you just get your marks of, like, you know, distance.
I remember...
And then you just, like, watch where the actor goes in these distances, and you just pull off of that.
Well, I remember I've worked with some actors that, you know, have been around for a while, and they use the style of just framing. They'll talk to the operator to see, it's like, how much room do I have?
Yeah.
And they're like, you can go from here to here, and it's going to be, like, about, like, chest to hairline. And that's like our frame. Yeah. Like, okay.
And a movie also used to shoot with like much less narrow depth of focus, much more open.
Yes. We were just talking about this.
We were just talking about this. Like a movie used to have much more deep focus where it's like you have a lot of space to play with in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially like older films, which this is not one of. this is not like, you know, Citizen Kane or something.
Right.
Anyway,
this movie's marketed as a black comedy.
Yes. Ostensibly it is.
Yeah.
Except it's like neither like that serious nor that funny is kind of the problem.
Yeah.
I don't know. This movie's like
fine.
Yeah, it's like fine at best, right? But
that's like the worst though. You'd almost wish it was either.
Like you kind of want this to be a disaster, or you want this to be great.
Right. Yeah. I think the moment where right before the Haas situation was like, if this is the tone of this movie, like I could get into it.
Yeah.
Like where he's like being yelled at by like four different people. And
yeah,
that
scene is good.
It's good.
That scene's really good.
Yeah. And like with the police, like hostage negotiators, like they have some really good bits.
Yeah.
Like I could see like there was a draft of this that was really funny.
The thing is, once you get to that, like that midpoint there, where like, and we'll talk about it when we go through the plot, but like when he's like in that incredible scene where everyone's yelling at him,
mm-hmm.
it's great, but you're just like, where does the movie go from this?
Exactly.
There's like not really an evolution of this unless you just quite literally smash the window open and change the whole movie.
Which is what they did.
Which is wisely what they do.
Right.
I do think it's a very smart choice.
Yes.
However, you know the movie they turn it into is not that successful.
Well, the thing is, it's like, and Roger Ebert actually says this in the review that I'll just read. It's like, my problems with Cadillac Man were probably inspired more by false expectations than anything on the screen. And maybe if Tim Robbins had come crashing in through the window in the first scene, I would have liked it more, which is honestly, I think like a very good like review, because I think that whole thing should have been like the second scene of the movie.
Yeah.
And then the rest of this should have been like a Dog Day Afternoon spiff.
I genuinely like, I just think like the two halves of the movie, were they better? I like how it's a midpoint change. Because I really like that you get that 40 minutes of escalation.
I don't feel it escalating, though. Do you?
It's not, like, super successful. But when you do get to that point where, like, every plot line that Robin has gotten himself embroiled in all comes to a head at once.
Yeah.
Like, that's the escalation that, like, you need to fine-tune a little more. Mm-hmm. But I like the concept of it, and I like where it gets.
Robin's very good at playing sweaty.
He's very good at playing sweaty.
And, like, I hate to paint this comparison, but I almost think about like Uncut Gems.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you imagine like put like Adam Sandler aged Robin Williams from Uncut Gems into that role, like I could see that still working kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing difference is like Adam Sandler's role in Uncut Gems is more like sleazy, sweaty.
Yeah.
Whereas like Robin is more just like,
he's not sleazy enough.
He's not sleazy enough. Movie. Yeah, he needs to be more sleazy.
Because
I think that's a huge thing.
The great used car salesman movie is Robert Zemeckis' Used Cars. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen Used Cars?
No.
You would love Used Cars.
Good.
So it's a movie about Kurt Russell is a used car salesman at a used car store in basically the middle of the desert. And opposite them is another used car lot. And they're both run by twin brothers, played by the same guy.
Good.
And it turns into basically a war between the two shops. This movie escalates to the point of Kurt Russell like taps into White House broadcasts of Jimmy Carter in order to play a commercial for a used car, for their used car store.
Mm-hmm.
In which they basically just rip a woman's top off and just like throw her boobs at the camera. Well, he's like, come to the store, is basically the idea. It's a movie about politics.
Yeah.
But using like a used car lot as the allegory for it.
Okay.
It's a really good movie.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
You'd like it.
Yeah.
But Kurt Russell is so sleazy in it.
Good.
Well, it's like, you can see the grime like coming out of his pores. like that's the level of sleaze we're talking about.
Yeah.
And that movie is so satirical, which this is not successfully satirical.
No.
It's not sweaty enough.
Yeah.
Like Uncut Gems is a good comparison because Uncut Gems is like a nervously funny movie.
Yeah.
It's not like inherently funny. You're just like
it's like one or the other. It's like you're either uncomfortable watching that movie or you're uncomfortable but laughing.
Yes. You're like,
you're never not comfortable.
You're nervously laughing. But Uncut Gems is a similar movie, has a similar concept like the midpoint of this, where it's like the end of Uncut Gems, like there's only one way that movie has to end.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert for Uncut Gems. Skip ahead 30 seconds if you haven't seen it. When he gets shot
in the head,
that's the only way that movie can end.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just watching him continue to become sweatier.
Exactly.
Like, he wins the bet at the end of Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
He's just going to reinvest that money into more bets.
Exactly.
That's where that if he survives, that's where the movie goes.
Yeah.
It's not like his problems are solved.
Yeah.
And so that's how you have to end that. It's similar as this, like, where's Robin's story going to go when he's confronted by all these things happening at once? And his life's going to collapse, and he's just going to go sleep with a sixth woman.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, you gotta break this, and you can't shoot him in the head, because that would be insane.
Yeah.
So you have to have that you know, complete change.
His life is all fixed by this situation.
Yes.
But it's not in line with the sleaziness of his character. Like, I almost think, like, he... You know what this movie almost, like, did, but it didn't, and it should have, because it would have been good at it? It's like, you're making a movie about it, like, a used car salesman.
Yeah.
Who's in a hot situation, and he's like kind of using his like salesman-ish tactics to try to like go back and forth between this like deranged lunatic and the cops, and he's trying to like broker the best deal.
It's the movie is trying to do that, but it tries. But like basically it's less his skill as a used car salesman and that it is Tim Robbins' stupidity.
Yes.
Like basically all the negotiations are, he's like, what if you let the women go? And Tim Robbins, why would I do that?
Yeah.
He's like, because they're women. He's like, okay. And he lets them all go.
Yeah.
Like, where's the dramatic tension in this?
Yeah, exactly. Like, because at some point he eventually gets everybody to get out.
Yeah.
And it's just Robin and Tim Robbins. And at that point, I'm like, you know, I think about, I mean, there's so many classic, like, hostage movies, like Dog Day Afternoon.
It's the Dog Day Afternoon thing.
But it's like, I think about like Inside Man, where it's like, they're like bargaining for like food, they're bargaining for things with people.
Mad City.
Mad City.
A movie we talked about on this show.
As you just said this, I thought, again, we're going back to Dustin, our friend, Dustin Hoffman.
Mad
a
City.
Character we should cover on this show, because we've talked a lot about many of his films already. But yeah, with Mad City, this needed to be like the twin of that movie, in the sense that he is a news like reporter journalist who's trying to broker a deal with both sides to gain the best story.
Yes.
Whereas Robin is brokering like a deal between both sides to get the best like sale.
Yeah. You have to feel Robin's sale. And also a big problem with this is like,
there is no sale.
There's no sale. But in a movie like this, you have to feel the relationship these two characters felt.
Yeah.
Anytime that there's a movie, like A Dog Day Afternoon, Mad City, Inside Man, Enemy Mine is kind of like a similar concept to this, like the Enemy Mine trope, where it's like the episode of the TV show where the good guy and the bad guy get trapped in a cave together and they have to work together to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you do that, you have to feel the connection the two of them have brokered by the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel a connection between...
No, like Robin just starts to like him.
Yeah, they just start liking each other randomly.
And like, all because he said, like, I slept with your wife and nobody else did. But then he's like, he becomes cool with that.
Yeah.
I don't understand Tim Robbins' logos and ethos.
No,
his character.
He doesn't like... say what you will about the tenets of National Socialism, dude, at least it's an ethos. Quote from Big Lebowski.
Oh, okay.
It's a point being like, you have to have like an ethos. You have to have a point.
Because Tim Robbins is coming in with a gun to do what?
He's coming in to...
shoot the guy who slept with his girlfriend.
No, to hold the guy who slept with his girlfriend hostage?
No, that's the result.
No, because he has all the bombs on his bike. He like clearly intends for this to become a hostage situation.
You think so?
Like he
I don't think he did.
He runs into the place and like has everybody corralled. Like that's his initial goal. Is a hostage situation.
I don't know. I think that's what it becomes. I think his initial goal is to just like, he barges in and is like, who slept with my wife? Did all these people sleep with you? And it's like, some of these guys are customers, bro.
Yeah.
And it becomes a hostage situation, but like I don't think he prepared for the hostage part of this plan. I think it was more so like, I'm going to come in and just shoot somebody.
Yeah.
And that was the only plan and what it developed into. And so to that point, it's like, then when Robin reveals he's the one that slept with his girlfriend, and doesn't shoot him because he relies on him to help him out of this hot. Like I'm very, very lost and confused at like the relationships that are being made. None of it works.
I'll quickly summarize the first, like just the plot of the movie.
Yeah.
Because I think it's like. Like we're saying, it's not ultimately very successful and there's not that much to it.
Yeah.
Like this movie starts with the best shot of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, because it starts with the New York City skyline. Mm-hmm. You've seen this exact shot many times before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like panning over the buildings and then it pans down to a cemetery.
Yeah.
And it moves over the cemetery in such a way that the gravestones look like city blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
I see your game.
I see your game.
What are we doing with it? And ultimately, we're not really doing anything with it, but it's like a really cool idea.
Yeah, no, it is a cool idea. I like
it's like
this
it's
for
a,
sure.
It's a, the cemetery is a graves. It's like a grid system.
Yeah.
And it looks like basically instead of panning over the city skyline, we're panning over the gravestones. I'm like, all right, where's this going? What are we building to?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is we're not building much. but we wind up at a hearse that's broken down, leading a funeral procession. Robin pulls up in front of it and tries to sell them a new car because he's that sleazy.
This is a good setup.
It's a good setup for a different movie.
And because we also, this is the other thing that is terrible about this movie. It starts with this weird setup on like Robin breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Voiceover. And it drops that.
Yeah.
We drop it halfway through. We don't keep it up. We don't maintain
it. Which if they had truly dropped it. It's like an interesting dynamic, but it comes back in the end. Because the last shot of the movie is him being like, and that's how I saved the day.
Something
like that. I don't know.
Well, because we get the voiceover, it's like, am I really going to try to sell this woman on the day of her husband's funeral a new car?
This is a lot of voiceover we don't need. You can get everything that he's saying out of just his performance.
Yeah.
But he's like, he's trying to sell this widow a used car.
First he offers the driver of this hearse to buy a new hearse. Do they sell hearses?
I guess he sells a hearse. I don't know.
But then the widow comes up. They have a pickup truck carry the casket.
It's a funny joke where the funeral director is just like, we have been able to secure you a pickup truck and like this beat up old pickup truck. And then the guy just gets together, like, yo.
I love when they load it up and they do the.
they slap the top of the
and
coffin.
Robin's like, pretty sure he's still in there, guys. And so then, yeah, then he tries to sell the widow a used car. And she's like, are you trying to sell me a car on the day of my husband's funeral?
He's not even in the ground yet.
He's not even in the ground yet. Well, what have,
and Robin just goes, yes, I am.
Yes, I am. And you know what would have been funny? If she's like, I'll come by tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been funny. But instead, she's like, she rips it up. It's like, you are a sleazy bastard. It's like, yeah, that's what we expected her to say. Yeah. But like, if you want to make this like bit about like, because what's the joke? Is the joke that he thinks he's a good used car salesman? He's not. Or is the joke that he's such a good used car salesman that there is no boundaries?
I think the joke is that he just like hates himself.
Well, that doesn't come across.
Like, he just like, I can't believe it. Like, he's shameless, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Because we right after that, we get introduced to more of his life. His character's name is Joey O'Brien, by the way.
Joey O'Brien, yeah. He has an ex-wife with a daughter.
Played by Pamela Reed, who was his wife in the football movie. What was it called?
Best of Times.
Best of Times.
Yes.
Playing his wife yet again.
Yes. And then he has two mistresses, one who's married and one who isn't. The one who isn't married is kind of dumb. That's pretty much her personality.
Yeah. He's got a lot of mistresses.
Yeah, he's got more. I think we just see those two, though, right?
He's his ex-wife wants alimony.
Yeah.
His daughter's missing.
That comes later in the movie, but like we never see her until the very fucking end.
Yeah, we see her
end.
At the very end, which is a problem.
Yeah.
He's, you know, sleeping with Fran Drescher. Current president of SAG, the nanny herself.
Good.
Who's married, and it's like a secret relationship. He also is sleeping with Lila, who is just like another woman who's trying to make it as a fashion designer.
I don't know.
But like he's juggling these three women essentially, and his job, which he's going to be fired from unless he can sell 12 cars.
Yeah.
Oh, and he also has a loan to a mafia kingpin.
I missed that bit.
Yeah,
until the very
they show
end,
up at the very end.
When the guy's like, you saved my son. You owe me nothing.
Yeah.
Like,
because the mafia kingpin's son works at the dealership.
I guess.
Anyway. But he has to sell 12 cars in 2 days.
Yeah.
Right?
Or else he loses his job.
He loses his job and everything else. And there's going to be a big sale on Sunday, which is when he thinks he can make the most sales. So he tries to convince everybody he knows to buy a car or like come by on the day of the sale. He asks Fran Drescher, bring your husband.
Quick sidebar.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still illegal, but did you know at one point in Indiana, it's illegal to sell or buy a car on Sunday?
That's funny.
I don't know if it's still
the
a thing.
Lord's Day.
It's something about it.
The Sabbath.
It is like an old religious rule that's just like never gone away where it's like on Sunday, you're not allowed to buy or sell a car. It's something to do with like religious Sabbath stuff, but like, I don't know if it's still a law. It sounds like it's something that would have like changed, but I also wonder if other states have this kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It was just so goofy. It's very goofy, very goofy law in Indiana.
Very silly.
And they're like, why? So when they're like, we have a big sale on Sunday, I'm like, hey, that doesn't work. And I'm like, oh, it's just an Indiana thing. So yeah, then I'm just going to cut to the dealership.
Yeah, because he's at the dealership and
there's a lot of business. We skipped over 45 minutes of business.
It's just business, but it's everything we've described is all that happens.
Yeah.
Because the first customers he's trying to sell to are this older Russian couple.
Yes.
Who he's like, you should get this car. And they're like, how much it cost?
It's like, how much do you take American money? It's like, well, we certainly don't take Russian money.
Yeah. But then right at this moment, very good. Right at this moment, Fran Drescher comes in with her husband.
And, he's like,
and so he's bouncing between
the
two different customers.
And he's also trying to sell to the Hearst guy who came in.
Yeah, the Hearst guy comes in too. And so he's got three customers. His wife's on the phone trying to tell him that their daughter is missing.
Yeah.
And that he needs to go look.
Bouncing around four different things right now.
And he is like getting so sweaty. He's bouncing between. He keeps being like, give me one moment, please, to the Russians. We're like, it's been multiple moments.
I'm sick of your moment. Sick of your minute. It's like, please, just 1 minute.
And Fran Drescher's getting frustrated with him because he's kind of blowing her off.
Yeah.
And he's just like, everybody stop. And then at that exact moment, Tim Robbins drives a motorcycle through the window of the dealership with a machine gun, and is like, "Everybody down!" And corrals everyone to a corner of the room.
Yes.
Because he is the husband or boyfriend? Unclear.
Husband, because there's a line where it's like, "She's not my girlfriend, she's my wife!"
The secretary of the dealership, Donna, who's like kind of a tertiary character.
Yes.
Is Tim Robbins' wife, and he believes that she is sleeping with someone in the dealership.
Yeah.
So he's going to hold everyone hostage until he finds out who.
Mm-hmm.
And he believes it was like, it's because she's like, "I slept with everyone."
Yeah.
And so he's like, "Everybody, I slept with my wife. I'm going to kill them all."
But he starts by shooting her.
Yeah, he shoots her.
There's a moment where I thought, did he just kill her? Because it looks like she gets shot in the head and then she collapses. And I'm like, oh my God, this movie really took a fucking turn.
Yeah.
But then they don't commit to it.
Yeah, they don't.
The bullet just grazed her head, so she's not dead.
She's totally fine.
She's very much fine. So then he does that, and then Robin comes in, and he's like, no. I'm the only one who slept with her. I'm the only one. Nobody else here did. And then Donna wakes up, and she's like, "What are you talking about?" It's like, "Donna, remember that I'm the only one who slept with you?" Like, trying to be like, "Shut up, bitch. Like, come on.
Come on.
And she's like, "Oh, yeah." And so then Larry is beside himself. Yeah.
Larry is Tim Robbins' name.
Yeah, Tim Robbins. And so the police show up.
As they would.
And they have the whole place surrounded. And they're trying to use a megaphone and be like, "Come on out with your hands up." And then Tim Robbins, like, pushes Robin Williams out at gunpoint. And they do this like parrot game, a telephone game of like, "What's the guy's name?" They want to know your name. "I'm not going to tell him my name." "He's not going to tell him your name." He's like, "Well, can he come out and talk to you?" They want you to come out and talk to them. "I'm not going to come out." It's like, "He was never not going to come out and talk to you." They do like a pretty fun like phone game thing going on. And then it goes nowhere and they go back inside. So that eventually there's a phone call. And it's not Walter, the investigator. It is Captain Mason, played by Anthony Powers.
Yes.
And we forgot to say this, but there was a bit in this movie where, like, the car salesman, whenever they need to go on, like, one of their mail meetings or whatever, they go to this Chinese restaurant across the street.
Yes.
And so the call is coming from the police, who have established their headquarters for this hostage negotiation, to be in this Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very funny, because there's multiple moments he's like, "All right, so what do you need? Do you want any?" And he's like, and then like the Chinese like waitress comes up and it's like, "You're going to pay now, please." And like, "Oh, what? 1 minute, please." So I thought that was a pretty funny bit. But they're going back and forth on the hostage negotiation. It's not really going anywhere. Larry is like, doesn't know what to do. At one point he threatens to like shoot himself, and they're like, "No, Larry, no. And then Robin is kind of like going back and forth with Larry, Tim Robbins, and the cops. Eventually, he's able to like negotiate to get like some folks.
He gets
to leave,
all the women out.
Gets all the women
and
out.
And then
gets
he convinces Larry
out.
To let everyone else out, because he's like growing this weird affection to Larry.
Yeah.
For no apparent reason. And then he's like, "Well, now it's just you and me. So what if you just give yourself up?" And Larry's like, "I'm not giving myself up. I want out of here." And Robin eventually convinces him to give himself up.
He's like, "You got to drop your gun. I'm not going to drop my gun. All right, well, at least unload your weapon and I'll take the bullets.
Give me the bullets. Because we want to get you an insanity plea." Is that the idea?
I don't know. Jeff, I don't know.
It's like really poorly like structured at this point. Like the movie has lost the thread.
Yeah.
Because Tim Robbins just leads Robin Williams out, gun to his back. The gun's not loaded. Of course, the police just shoot him.
Yeah.
Which was like obviously what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
Which is what happens in every movie like this.
Yeah. And then it plays up as like this fucking dramatic moment because Robin's like, "Larry!"
But like he's fine.
Yeah, he's
fine.
They
load him in his stretcher and he's like, "All right, I think I'll be fine."
And then he like whispers to him, it's like, "I never slept with Donna." He's like, What? And he gets loaded off into the hospital. And then literally like in
everything
the most,
all of Joey's problems are solved.
The mafia Don comes up. It's like, "You owe me nothing now.
For
and
saving
then, like,
my son."
The car dealership boss is like, "You have a job for life." And then the ex-wife, Pamela Reed, shows up, and it's like, maybe we should get back together and find our daughter. And then the daughter shows up with her boyfriend or something.
And they're all like, oh, we're all like, you know.
Like, it
and
literally.
Like, can you give a used car salesman a second chance? She's like, maybe. And then he like turns to the camera and is like, still got it. I don't know, something like that. Right?
So stupid. And then credits.
Yeah, then credits.
Movie's over.
It's like, can you believe I'm a car salesman?
I don't know.
Give me a chance to save the day.
What a
weird, it's something like that, right?
What a weird movie. So yeah. Anywho, that's the movie.
That's kind of like Man, right?
Yeah, it comes out May 18th, 1990. Movie's an hour and a half. Budget $15 million, makes $27.6 million. So it made some money.
Like, it's a Robin Williams comedy, so people want to go see it.
Open at number two.
Most people are like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's got like it got mostly mixed reviews. Like I already told you guys, like Roger Ebert's review. Variety magazine wrote, and I love this quote, the distinction of being the loudest film of 1990 and one of the worst.
Honestly, powerful stuff.
It is a very loud movie. Like there's a lot of, it's a lot of volume. Like there's this, there's a lot of shit going on all the time in this movie. There's like, literally there's one cut point that I thought was actually pretty genius because it's Robin in the car with his mistress, with their dog. And like they're in traffic and he's like honking at the horn. He's like, come on, go, go. And the dog's barking loudly. And he's like, come on, go, go, go. And then it cuts to like another scene and like the car alarm is going off when he parks his car. So it's just loud noises cut to loud noises. Like this movie's meant to be like a very loud movie.
Yes.
People are shouting all the time. Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of it. Movie doesn't do much.
Like,
it doesn't really affect Robin's career all that much because it kind of comes out mostly under the radar.
Yeah.
And it's also seen as Robin not being like the problem of this movie.
Yeah, no, he's like fine. The movie just doesn't utilize him well and the movie doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's hard for him to work if the movie doesn't work, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't say Robin's the issue of this movie. So
it's a good character for him, but the like him playing a used car salesman inherently is good. But the movie doesn't let him really do his riffs.
I think there's a script to this that like could work.
Like you kind of want Robin Williams as a used car salesman to be like the opening of Aladdin, where it's just like he's kind of like, oh, look at this car, and like just kind of like just stream of consciousness, just what everybody thinks about these vehicles just going off.
Yeah.
That's what you envision. And, you know, Hongshu.
Sorry. Oh, I'm so tired.
A little tired. But yeah, I think it's kind of like Man, right?
Yeah, that's the movie. Thank you all so much for listening. you'll join us next week for Awakenings, which that's a big movie in Robin's accolades, where he's acting alongside Robert De Niro. So anyway, yeah, next week you're going to get Awakenings. The week after that, you're going to wish for Wings at Work.
Yeah. But next year is Awakenings.
Are we going to have a guest for Awakenings?
We might have a guest for Awakenings.
We might have a guest for Awakenings. Okay.
Tune in next week for Awakenings. Hopefully we'll have a guest.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for listening. We at least did the justice of making this more than a 30-minute episode.
Yeah.
I think, Jeff, you said a crisp 40.
Yeah.
Well, we're at 39.
Oh, hell yeah.
Counting.
Take us out.
So I'm going to see if I can time this out perfectly to time it out for 40 minutes. So with that being said, thank you all so much for listening to the Travolting Presents, Bobbin for Robin, Cadillac Man, 1990. If you like this episode, please remember to rate, review, comment, like, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on, of which we are on wherever you get your podcast. May that be Spotify, Apple Podcast, YouTube, Amazon Music, Pandora.
YouTube?
We're everywhere. YouTube. As always, special thanks to Rebecca for the graphic design and Michael Van Bodegem Smith for the theme music that is now taking you out. Always remember, fuck White Castle. See you next week, guys.